Oscar Lopez Rivera, Yuki Kimura, all freedom fighters, all those who love freedom enough to fight for it. Dr. Matulu Shakur, Sundiata Okoli, all freedom fighters, all those who love freedom, love life enough to fight for it. Long live Earth First, the Earth Liberation Front, the Animal Liberation Front. Long live all those who fight for life. Long live the spirit of resistance. Long live revolution, and down with this rotten ass system. On the move.
Thanks for listening to our commemoration of the Move bombing, which took place 30 years ago. Thanks to Law and Disorder Radio, Behind the Mind Radio, and to the field recording volunteers who were part of KBOO 6 years ago, who recorded this speech by Ramona Africa. Thank you for being a supporting member of KBOO. If you are not, call now. I'm Erin Yankee. Thanks for listening.
KBOO would like to say thank you to our community partners that are feeding our volunteers today. Breakfast is from Crema Bakery at 2728 Southeast Ankeny, serving morning pastries, coffee, teas, cakes, sandwiches, and soups. Lunch is from Bridges Cafe and Catering at 2716 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, committed to using local and organic ingredients. Breakfast served all day and lunch on weekdays. Dinner is from Marrakesh at 1201 Northwest 21st Avenue, open daily 5 to 10 p.m. with belly dancing Wednesday through Sunday, serving Moroccan cuisine since 1989.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is just 1 minute after 11 o'clock. Stay tuned for Dirtbag host Glenn Andreessen, who will discuss that number one pest in the vegetable garden, slugs. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from One Green World, a local nursery offering hard-to-find fruiting plants designed to help you grow your own food and decorate your yard, deck, or patio. To order plants or their 2015 color catalog, their website is onegreenworld.com, or you can reach them by phone at 1-877-353-4028. And now, the dirt bag.
Good morning. We've reached the second Wednesday of the month at 11 o'clock. It's time for the dirt bag. Good morning. This is Glenn Andreessen here beside you now until 12 noon. No guest in this studio here. Jim is away visiting friends in Tennessee who took trips to, I believe it was the former Soviet Union in the 80s to gather plant material and things like that, but they're having a reunion in Tennessee, of all places. But I do have my fellow gardener, John, who will be joining the conversation through the hour to talk about the dirt bag and our fundraising, our membership drive here, as we do three times a year. Well, we don't have really too many events that are going on now. Jim normally takes care of that part, and I don't have any. Nobody sent me in anything. If you do have a gardening event that you would like to have us take a read on the air, please send it to us here at KBOO. If you have a gardening question, please feel free to give me a call, 503-231-8187. Or if you'd like to make a pledge ahead of time, you can always do that too. The plant of the month today is beets, that lowly beet, or is it that lowly? It's packed full of nutrition and quite easy to grow here in the Portland area in Western Oregon. I'll also be talking about slugs. That's a big topic and probably our number one pest. I've got a little story to go along with that. We will have a garden stumper and talk about slug control. But once again, if you have any questions about gardening, what's going on in your garden at this time of the year, 503-231-8187. I will also try to get to what's going on in the honeybee hive this month. Excuse me, one of the busiest months that we have. A lot of things growing out there. The bees are extremely busy. All right, on to beets. A little research has shown that we really cultivate four distinct forms of beets. Not all of them are essentially edible for us. The first is the beetroot or garden beet, as we know it, grown for its edible root. There's also the leaf beet, as it's sometimes called, or Swiss chard, more common name, grown for its edible leaves, doesn't put out a bulb at all. There's also the sugar beet, which is grown for its high sugar content, up to 20% sugar. That's amazing. Major source of sugar. And then, I'm not sure how to even pronounce this, the Mungelwurzel, grown for livestock feed, grown a lot in Europe. It's the beet is a biennial. That means if you plant it this year now, it will grow and it'll form beets by the late summer and fall. You can harvest them then. It will kind of go dormant, but you can harvest them all along the fall and into the winter as long as it's not frozen. And then if there are any left in the spring, they will start to bolt, form a seed pod, and eventually you'll get seeds out of that. That's why it's a biennial, two-year cycle. There. It's descendant from the wild sea beet of European coastal regions of the Mediterranean and the Atlantic area. Both Greeks and Romans cultivated beets. That's taken us back a while. Originally, it was cultivated for the leaves. And then I suppose some of the growers found a bulb and thought, let's try this, and we are where we are today. But it's unknown when they began to breed these beets for their swollen roots. But I'm glad they did. I'm quite fond of beets. The beet that I particularly enjoy is a hybrid called Red Ace. And I've tried many different varieties of beets, from the Winter Keepers to the Striped Shiogia, or however it's pronounced, I think there are some yellow beets, but nothing compares in the flavor that I've found to the Red Ace. And it's good at any size, even when they get to 3 to 4 inches in diameter. They still are sweet and not strong tasting. The time for planting beets, it's a kind of a cool season crop, but the Red Ace does do well in the heat of the summer, as long as it remains watered. That is a key here, because we don't want to let them dry out. While I'm thinking of it, the beet will eventually grow out of the soil. Maybe more than half of it is even above the soil level. Not to worry. That's totally normal. And it doesn't matter. As long as it has somewhat of a taproot, as long as it's well-watered, it will grow. Hey, that kind of reminds me about KBOO. If it's well-watered, well-supplied, we'll grow too. John, my neighbor gardener, or at least I think we live in near the same hood, is joining me now to talk about that.
That's right. So KBOO is definitely like a garden, and we're not like a monoculture here at KBOO. We're a diverse group of people, just like a diverse garden would be. And the contributions that KBOO members make to us are like the fertilizer, or like providing the tilth, the compost for the soil that allows KBOO to come up with its diverse viewpoints, its voices of integrity and insight on so many issues that allows Glenn to be doing his garden show right now, which is something I've always enjoyed for years. I'm a bit of an avid gardener myself, and I find the gardening metaphor to be perfect for KBOO. And we'd like to thank several people who made contributions online. Sandy in Portland.
Aha.
Dave in Portland. And Eloise in Portland. They have all turned the soil, added the compost to the magnificent garden that is KBOO. And you too can be a part of that. Dial 877-500-5266. We have folks standing by to take your contribution to help the garden of KBOO grow.
In the last month, I was trying to determine exactly when the dirt bag started. And I talked to Kathleen, who's one of the longest lived staff members here, and we thought maybe it was 1998 or so. So we've been cultivating the airwaves for that long.
Right, bringing the essential knowledge to how to garden in our particular biome, which is not the knowledge that everybody gets. If you buy just a general gardening book, it's going to teach you how to garden maybe elsewhere rather than here. And at KBOO, yeah, we're local and we're locally supported. And you can continue to help us with that support by dialing 877-500-5266. Imagine yourself to be one of the earthworms in the compost that makes KBOO grow.
Whoa. I've always approached the dirt bag based upon the knowledge that I've acquired from 40 years of gardening, and how I ignore not only many books that I've read, and frankly, some of my master gardener training, but just based upon my experience and what works in my garden. And that's how I've always kind of approached the dirt bag, is passing along my experience, and maybe you'll be able to learn something from that. Okay. Well, let's continue a little bit here on the beets. We will talk about planting beets. And I just did this in the last week in anticipation of this rain that we've been getting, which is very nice for us gardeners. I've actually even started to put out my irrigation system because things were getting dry underneath, particularly the berries and the fruit trees, which do, of course, use a lot of water when they're putting on leaves and growing fruit. So very important to keep an eye on that as well. What I do for beets, and just in general for when planting a bed that is going to cover the whole bed rather than, for example, a tomato plant that's every 2 feet or so, is I'll generally put down shake some of my eggshells there. I will shake out a little bit of rock dust or glacial dust. Oh, that just reminds me. I'm going to make a note here that we should talk about this glacial rock dust in more detail. Maybe we'll do that next month. But it's a good source, a good cheap source of the micronutrients, some of the other nutrients that we're not buying when we're buying fertilizer. So I'll sprinkle some of that on. I'll put some compost down. Then with my pointed hoe, we'll hoe a furrow. And with beets, I may do that 8 inches apart or so. I do crowd them a little bit more than the seed packet says. They'll normally say something like 16 inches apart, but 8 inches is what I go for. I'll plant I chop a row. I'm not tilling the whole bed. I'm just chopping a row. I have a pointed hoe, and so just to loosen the soil is essentially. I'm not rototilling the bed or anything similar to that, or even turning it with a shovel. I'm just loosening the soil so I can plant a seed about a half an inch down. Although the tip of my hoe goes down maybe 2 inches or so. Loosening the soil is all I'm doing, and essentially mixing in the compost, the rock dust, and the eggshells. I'll then, usually with my hand, we'll just make a furrow, a line in the soil, maybe a half an inch deep. I think that's generally what's recommended for beet seeds. Drop these, they're rather large seeds in there, relatively, because each seed is a compound seed. That is to say, it has 1 to 3 seedlings. And I've talked about this in the past few months. It's also the same with chard, because you know now that chard and beets are related. And if the conditions are right, all seeds in this compound seed will germinate. So I'm dropping these seeds maybe 1 to 2 inches apart, knowing full well that I'm going to have multiple seedlings coming up from one seed. I'll cover it up by hand, and in my neighborhood, I have to cover up the soil with something to protect it from the squirrels digging in it. They're not after the seeds. They're digging to find things or to bury peanuts from or whoever's feeding those darn squirrels or chestnuts or whatever they happen to find, but they can really dig up a freshly planted bed. So it's kind of a hassle, I have to admit it, but it's better in the long run. When the seedlings start to germinate, they will be, what I try to do is to get them very small when they are, maybe really before they have their first true leaves, just the two cotyledon leaves, as we call them. I want them pretty small. And if there's 2 or 3 or 4 sometimes seedlings in a clump, I will lift up the whole clump with my fingers, just dig underneath it, or a trowel. Fingers is generally fine. My soil is in good tilth. And we'll then replant one of the little seedlings. I'll transplant it in and take the others and fill in rows that have not germinated well, or that the squirrels have gotten to. Or I might start a whole new row, or a whole new bed for that matter. They transplant very well. They will suffer a little bit of transplant shock. It'll slow them down, but we're in it for the long run on beets, and there's no reason. That's fine. They don't all have to germinate, to mature at the same time anyway. I will water these freshly transplanted seedlings in with my irrigation system that is very gentle on the soil. Very gentle. It's a homemade system. I've talked about it this before, where I've drilled holes in a PVC pipe and regulate it with a valve at each bed, so the stream of water is very gentle, which is why I like this, my homemade system, because they need to get water right now. If it's damp soil like it is now, you could probably get by with that. When I am transplanting these seedlings, I'm also sometimes thinning. If I do have good germination, for example, if I have fresh seed, you'll always get much better germination with fresh seed. Then I want to thin to, probably around 3 inches apart, maybe even more, because you can imagine, if a beet is going to get 3 inches in diameter, and you leave just 3 inches between each beet, well, that's not enough. Oftentimes what I do, though, since it's hard to thin exactly what you know you're going to need, and I also should mention, that when I am thinning, I don't thin to that full 3 inches the first time through, because I may thin them to 2 inches or 1.5 inches or something, because I'm always leaving room for possible slug damage these two go together. And so I come back later then, a week later or so, and if they've survived slugs, then I'll thin to their regular distance apart, 3 to 4 inches. John, do you grow beets?
Yeah, I've definitely grown beets, and I think your description is a beautiful metaphor again for KBOO, KBOO.FM. And here at Membership Central, you can securely online donate to us at KBOO.FM. Call us on the phone at 877-500-5266. Glenn is describing the homemade way of growing incredibly delicious, nutritious vegetables. And that's basically what KBOO is like homemade radio. And I love the description that Glenn is giving about he makes a homemade irrigation system that just very gently trickles water down to the beet plants to help them grow. And KBOO listeners, what you can do to help us is to give us the same kind of sustenance is if you were to be able to make a monthly deduction. That's personally what I do. It's a little bit comes out of my checking account every month. I don't even notice it.
Trickling at its best.
Trickling at its best, and it has that same slow effect that promotes the growth of intelligent, informed, and diverse programming that KBOO provides for the community. And we urge people, you can even come down to the station, make your contribution in person. We can give you a tour of the station. You can see that we are literally making it work with very little. It is the support of the community. We have 8 staff, over 500 volunteers, over 4,900 members, and it is the membership that gets us going and makes the garden of KBOO grow. And I love the fact that you were talking about adding the glacial dust and the crushed eggshells, and the sweetness that that induces in the beets is essential. And yet when you mix that into the soil, it vanishes so quickly. It almost looks like it's not there. And I think like sometimes when you make a small contribution to KBOO, you think, what can that actually be doing for my community? Well, you're actually acting like the fertilizer of the community. And even though you feel like it vanishes into the soil, it nourishes and sustains community radio. So again, call us at 877-500-5266 and help us grow the garden that KBOO is.
Our KBOO listeners, longtime dirtbag listeners, know that I'm an avid honeybee keeper. Well, I have a colleague who is donating a 2-hour-long bee tour for two to his Live Honeybees Bee Sanctuary, which is near Northeast 23rd and Alberta.
That's just a terrific thing. I mean, for a $200 minimum pledge, you'll get a live honeybee tour. It's Live Honeybees is contributing a 2-hour-long bee tour for two of the Live Honeybee Sanctuary near Northeast 23rd in Northeast Alberta. Imagine you'll be able to go inside the life of a honeybee. And I know, Glenn, that you raise honeybees yourself.
Yep. It's a fascinating experience to be up close with the bees, and to when we pull out a frame, which would be part of this 2-hour-long tour, looking into several colonies to see what's going on in there, where the queen will be pointed out, the eggs that she's laying, just how they're raising their young. And there's also cool honey sweetened cool drinks here and snacks provided in this 2-hour-long bee tour for a $200 minimum pledge. It would be a fine weekend event for somebody.
Yeah, that's an exciting premium that I myself would like to be able to do. And I want to go ahead and thank Scott. Scott is a new member from Portland. He came in person and made his donation to support the Dirtbag. The Dirtbag is like KBOO itself. It's growing naturally. It provides diverse. We're not a monoculture here. We're a diverse group of people. And just like a well-grown garden, it's not all just one voice. It's not all just just one viewpoint. It's diverse, and that diversity provides strength, just like it does in a garden or in agriculture. When you have a lot of things growing together, they tend to be able to resist pests. And I know you're going to be getting on to our favorite pest, yeah. The ubiquitous slug.
Yeah. That's a wonderful metaphor, John, that we don't have all the same view. Nature doesn't grow all the same plants, and it's much more resilient when we garden with many different inputs, and when we contribute with many different inputs to KBOO.
Right.
Either through your contribution of any amount, it's all trickles in, it can pour in. We like that too. Of course, but it's healthier when we all contribute.
Absolutely. And you can do that by calling 877-500-5266 or donating securely online at kboo.fm.
Okay. We are back to the dirt bag with the... I think that's... I've covered about what I wanted to cover there with the beets. Once again, oh no, let me continue on there a little bit, because the beets and chard have a very particular pest to their leaves. It's called a leaf miner. It's a fly that lays its egg on the surface of the beet leaf, generally on the underneath. You can see these. They're white, vivid white, but very small. And they're lined up sometimes two, three, four, five, right next to each other. If you spot them, it's easy enough to just scratch them out with your fingernail. But some of them will hatch into little fly larvae. We would call that maggots. And they chew into the leaf. And then they mine the insides of the leaves between the top surface and the lower surface of the leaves. Pretty small space there, but that's why they're called leaf miners. And for beets, it's not a big of deal is if it's in spinach, for example, where you're going to be, that's it. You just want the leaf, or that's all you grow the spinach for, of course. But for beets, even though you're growing it for the beet, you can eat the leaves, but oftentimes these leaf miners will make them inedible. But I've never really had it kill the beet plant. It will still continue to grow and produce a beet for you. Gardeners will ask, well, how do you deal with those leaf miners? Well, what do I do? Nothing. Well, I don't do anything directly to the leaf miners. But what I do encourage is larger wasps to come to my yard. Mud daubers, paper wasps, even yellow jackets find these leaf miner larvae tasty morsels for their young, their larvae. They feed meat. These wasps feed meat to their young as a protein source. Now, this differs from honeybees, who are strict vegetarians. They serve, so to speak, or feed protein to their, pollen to their larvae as a protein source and fats and minerals. So big difference there. Bees are vegetarians, but wasps need to find this meat to feed to them. It's mostly wasps, of course, that you're going to find at your picnics and whatnot, because they're after, whatever you're serving, caviar, salmon, all right, even hot dogs. They will chew off chunks of meat and take it back to feed to their young. But the adults only, or for the most part, for the vast majority of their diet, they're eating nectar. And where do we get nectar? From flowers. So what I do then to help control these leaf miners on the beets and chard and spinach is plant flowers, not necessarily amongst my beets and chard, but in the vicinity. And what's the vicinity? Oh, I'd say 10 to 30 feet. These insects can fly and will do so, but they need all sources of food for all ages of their bees, from the larvae to the adults. So if we're providing nectar and providing leaf miners, then we've got habitat for the controllers of the insects. So plant more flowers as John was saying, we want a diverse garden. We want a diverse ecosystem there that where you're going to attract many beneficial insects and birds. And the insects are not going to devastate your garden that way. It's a very holistic approach, a very ecosystem approach to gardening, that everything's connected. And when we realize that, our gardens will be healthier. For the chard, what I do is when I see an infected leaf, I don't necessarily or immediately pull it off and kind of clean up the plant, if you will. I leave the outer ones to continue to attract these wasps to that plant to eat the and find and eat the larvae. After a while, I almost feel sorry. Well, I do feel sorry for these adults who just search tirelessly, endlessly looking for the larvae. And after a while, there are no larvae there because they've eaten them all. They've taken them all away. So, you know, within a period of time, the wasps will not come back to the plant because there's nothing there for them. That allows the leaf miners to kind of get another little hold on them, but then the wasps will find out. You know, in nature, everything is full of cycles, and there's big spikes and valleys in individual populations, but in our garden, we want just a rolling graft line. Nothing too out of the ordinary, nothing causing concern, nothing to be alarmed about. So that's my story with the beets. I usually devote a whole bed to beets because not only do I like them and they're versatile, but they store outside very well. I hardly ever have to pick them. This last year, they were out in our garden until, I don't know when we did the last one, maybe in March, or something like that. But once again, my suggestion is the red ace. Okay, well, to lead us into the next conversation on slugs, I pulled out this old relic from Frank Zappa, and it's called I'm the Slime.
I'm gross and perverted. I'm obsessed and deranged. I have existed for years, but very little has changed. I'm the tool of the government and industry too, for I am destined to rule and regulate you. I may be vile and pernicious, but you can't look away. I make you think I'm delicious with the stuff that I say. I am the best you can get. Have you guessed me yet? Well, I'm the slime oozing out from your TV set. You will obey me while I lead you and eat the garbage that I feed you. Until the day that we don't need you, don't go for help, no one will heed you. Your mind is totally controlled. It has been stuffed into my mold. And you will do as you are told until the rights to you are sold. Well, I am the slime.
You know, that almost sounds like he was a precursor to some rap songs. And that's probably from about, I don't know, 1970-ish. Something like that. Frank Zappa. Mm-hmm. I'm the slime. Well, let's get right into the slugs. I don't know how this is going to go over here. But, you know, this is a major pest in our gardens. I heard a talk once by the former host of the Victory Garden, Roger Swain, and he posited that the more legs a creature has, the less likely it is to be a pest. So I wrote a column on this one time. for a newspaper. And I thought, well, what's the number one pest that I have in the garden? And sure enough, zero legs, the slug. Of course, at the other end was the lobster, which have 10 legs. And, you know, who's ever had a problem with slugs in the garden? I mean, excuse me, with lobsters in the garden there. So, but the slugs that we have a problem with in our gardens are not the native slugs, particularly. In fact, I've never seen a banana slug in my Portland, my Northeast Portland garden. I've seen them in Portland, certainly, but not in our gardens. The banana slug, which can get pretty good size, you know, up to 8 inches long and have various colors. Maybe you'll see them when you're out hiking. They can be yellow or green with mottled spots and lemon yellow, light tan, dark brown, black blotches, whatnot. And so I won't talk about that much, but I will just caution you that if you see that one on the trail, let it be. Let it be, indeed. Slugs belong to the phylum Mollusca, or the Mollusca. And this is a big, big, big species in this phylum here, maybe estimated 100,000 species. They include octopuses and squids, oysters and clams, snails, slugs, and some other ones that I'm not really too familiar with that we don't have around here. But we have a problem with there are maybe 10 or so species of non-native slugs that we have in our gardens, but they're not, all 10 are not a big problem. But there are big three that are the problem. The European black slug, the great gray garden slug, and the milky slug. I'll talk about all of them. They can, the European black slug, which comes in many different colors besides black, that one of the typical varieties that we'll see is kind of brown with an orange rim, if you will. And they're pretty good size, maybe half the size of a banana slug, maybe 5 to maybe 6 inches long when in motion. But when not, it can really constrict itself and to half its size or so. The one species of European black slug at one time has damaged more than 75% of Washington's strawberry crop. The smaller slugs are another type of slug, the Great Gray Garden slug, is smaller than that, maybe 4 inches. And these have very distinct colorations. The mantle, which is kind of a shawl that it wears on its shoulders, if you will, is spotted like leopard. But the rest of the body, it on its mantle, as it's called, it has stripes, tiger stripes. So kind of those two, you know, tigers and leopard spots identify the Great Gray Garden Slug. And it is one of the handful of cannibalistic slugs that we have. That's right. It could be going after a slug. That could be kind of nice there. So that's its identifying the marks. The milky slug, smaller. It's about 2 inches long, generally light gray or brown. But the distinguishing characteristic of this slug is that it produces a milky slime. And if you find these in the garden and try to crush it or do anything with it, it will secrete its slime that's milky in color, whitish in color. And there's other identifying marks, but that's the main one there. So those are the three that you will find in your garden. They can live from 1 to 6 years. Don't you like to hear that? What they eat depends on what's there to offer. It can be, if they're out in the forest, it could be, you know, fungi, lichens, but it could also be green plants, worms. I've seen slugs that have worms in their mouths, that the worm is still alive. I mean, they've swallowed part of the worm, But it's kind of sad, but you know, you try to pull it out and it doesn't come out there. But so they'll eat worms, they'll eat centipedes, other insects, they'll eat animal feces. Oftentimes they'll be, you'll see them doing that, carrion and other slugs. They do lay eggs, as I'll mention here, that they are hermaphrodites, which means they have both reproductive organs, but usually it still takes two to tango. Although if there isn't another slug to tango with, then they will, I guess, you know, use both of their reproductive organs and I guess have sex with themselves, and they can produce eggs, usually in clutches of 3 to 50, but sometimes as many as 500 eggs. I guess that's always a part, you know, with gardens, that there's always going to be the slugs. And we don't want to make any disparaging remarks about slugs, do we?
Well, I'm very curious. This is John out of Membership Central. I'm curious about what your cure for living with slugs would
yes,
be.
Yes, that's coming up.
And indeed, and that's will be fascinating. And that's the reason why people should dial 877-500-5266 to help contribute to KBOO. We urge you to consider a monthly deduction, and that is like the lifeblood of KBOO. We're like a garden. We're diverse. We're sustainable. We bring sweetness and nutrition to your brain. We educate. We illuminate. We allow diverse voices like Glenn's, who I've listened to for years. I'm delighted to be able to be here to support today. And if you want to, you could come down to the station. We could give you a tour. You could look around, see that we do this on the proverbial shoestring. There's only 8 staff, 500 volunteers, and 4,900 members. Come join and be one today. And so slugs are there. They're something that we have to deal with. I think that KBOO is kind of like a slug antidote. We're dealing with some slime out there in the world that sometimes you kind of need to scrape off and get some clarity, and KBOO helps to provide that clarity for you. So again, call 877-500-5266 or contribute securely online at kboo.fm.
Now, I think most gardeners are kind of a thrifty bunch. You know, we live by the motto, or at least I do, use it up, wear it out, make it do or do without. And we garden for various reasons, from fun and enjoyment and just being outside. But with gardening, you can actually, you know, pay for itself. And I'm hoping that maybe through the years you've gotten enough tips here from the dirt bag that you've had a better crop and, you know, you made some money on it. Well, here's a time to contribute to KBOO, to the dirt bag, just a little bit a month. It all adds up. It's kind of like rainfall. A little is good. Too much, well, as far as membership, we'll take any amount. Okay, well, I have had a phone call here to deal with the slug's counterpart, the snail. And this has something to do with the garden snumper today. So I am going to just talk about, or just ask the question here. I don't have our theme music today there. The who, the what, the why, the where, the how. But the question is simply, snails need what element in the soil to construct their shells? What element do they need? And this is kind of interesting. So if you know the answer to that, 503-231-8187. Sorry, no prizes today. I'll have to talk to Dawn and see if there's any more EcoFilm series or EcoFilms coming up. Anyway, 503-231-8187. If you know what element that snails need in the soil in order to construct their shells. And there has been an increase in snails in the last, oh, I don't know, I'd say 10 to 15 years. Didn't seem like I saw snails much at all. But I'm assuming they came here inadvertently, you know, probably not somebody that just thought, oh, maybe we could raise snails for escargot. But anyway, snails are here, and they do just as much damage as slugs. And I think it's time to talk about how we're going to deal with these slugs here, huh? Well, for many years, there was Corey's slug and snail bait, and also Deadline, and it used the active ingredient called metaldehyde, which, you know, in some parts of Europe, it was considered an organic approach, an organic material, but not here in these United States. Its main problem is that it's just very toxic to pets, especially dogs. You know, who would, maybe it's kind of has a little sweet smell even to it, and you would squirt this stuff out there, and if a dog ate enough of it, it's pretty horrible. But it was very effective against slugs and snails, and in that when they ate this metaldehyde, it would paralyze the slug for maybe 48 hours. It wouldn't outright kill it, but it would paralyze it so it might be dehydrated by the sun. Of course, here in Oregon, in November, December, January, February, you know, we can have some 48-hour periods of very moist air and even rain, and it's conceivable that the slug would shake it off after 48 hours and would move on. That's why you would see the carcasses of these slugs that had consumed the metaldehyde-based baits. But now there is another bait or other baits that are considered less toxic, way less toxic, and in fact are approved for use in organic farms and gardens. They're OMRI approved. The Organic Materials Review Institute has taken a look at it and, based upon the lack of alternatives, has given the okay to be used in certified organic farms and gardens. And it uses as the active ingredient iron phosphate. It's just 1% of the ingredients. There's 99% so-called inert ingredients. Of course, we don't know exactly what those are, but generally they're attractants to the slug to do that. It works in a different manner. The slug will consume these pellets. It will go home for the day, and then the next day I'm not feeling so well. I'm not going to go out today. Kills them that way, you know, generally out of sight. So you generally don't see the slug carcasses if you are using these iron phosphate based baits. One common one available is Sluggo. You've probably seen that. That is OMRI approved. There are other iron phosphate based baits, but may have not gone through the designation for that. And they can be quite effective. As I mentioned earlier, that the European brown slug, or black slug, excuse me, may have damaged 75% of Washington's strawberry crop. Well, that's a big hit there. And so I sometimes use this bait around my strawberries and my dahlias. It's just like candy to them there. So those are some baits that I will use. But what I mostly do is put on my headlamp, which leaves both hands free, and I go out either early in the morning when it's still damp and not fully light, or in the evening of the same time when it's not fully dark, and we'll look for slugs, particularly around my beans that are just coming up, around my carrots, who seem, boy, they're just dandy slugs on that. They love carrot. Those little tiny sprouts coming up, just tiny baby slugs can devastate a germinating carrot seed. Very disheartening when I see, oh, I've got a good stand of germinating carrots coming up, and then I'll go out a couple of days later and say, boy, I thought there were more here than that. And then I look down and all I see are these little stubs. Very disheartening there. So I like that. That's one method here. I also, when I'm just gardening and I happen to upturn a slug, you know, I've just bit the bullet and these are non-native slugs, and I just take a stick, or if I have my pruners there, I just do them in. Another maybe less ceremonial way is the two-brick method. Mm-hmm. I don't know that that needs any explanation. But one of my favorite methods is to put down boards. It can be older boards that have kind of starting to rot and whatnot. Put them down between your broccoli plants, for example, and come back in a couple of days in the morning. Lift up the board, and what's kind of nice, you will find slugs stuck to the board. They crawl in there to spend the day, and it makes it pretty easy for you to either slice them with a knife, or if you're a little squeamish that way, to pluck them off with your gloved hand and put them into some soapy water. Huh. It has to be soapy water, though. It can't just be water. They'll crawl out of that, and I've had that happen. You reach for the jar, and you get some slime. But that's not what we're doing now.
Mm-mm-mm. Where else but at KBOO would you learn how to take care of your slug population to keep it at a manageable level? Where else would you get this kind of diverse, nutritious kind of programming except at KBOO? And you can help keep this going by going to kboo.fm and donate securely online, or call us toll-free at 877-500-5266. Be part of the fertilizer that makes the garden of KBOO grow. And the diverse voices that we have here, do you feel your mind expanding when Glenn informs you about how to deal with slugs in your garden? I know that I do.
Well, good. I'm having an effect on you.
Absolutely.
I want to have an effect on a lot of folks here.
And you've been having an effect on the community for years with your insightful, pragmatic, and local insight into being a gardener here in the Northwest. And I want to remind listeners that we do have, for a $200 minimum pledge, we have the bee tour, the live honeybee. It's a two-hour tour. It's in Northeast Portland. You'll get to really get into the lives of the bees, see the bees. You'll be able to taste some of the honey, I believe, as well. And that's for a minimum $200 pledge. I think that's a swell thing to do. It's the kind of thing I would love to be a part of and see.
Sorry, John. There's also a gift basket involved with that pledge. There are honey, candles, and a propolis tincture.
All of the things that can be made from bees and from what bees create. And that's like KBOO. At KBOO, we have a diverse number of voices that bring you programming that enrich your life. And if you value it, if you're listening to us now, you know that you do. If you want to hear Glenn because you're getting your garden going, it's that time of the year. It's spring. I'm sure your green thumbs are itching to plunge into the soil and get plants down there, and you know that you depend upon people like Glenn and others at KBOO that bring you this essential information that you really can't live without. That being said, call 877-500-5266, and our volunteers are standing by. They'll be glad to take whatever amount that you can give, and we urge you that if you can, the way that I do it is I make a monthly contribution. I don't even notice it going out of my checking account because it breaks it up into such a manageable portion, as well as this is part of what really helps KBOO be able to budget sensibly when they know that they're going to be having those ongoing contributions. Also, you can contribute securely online at kboo.fm.
I've always approached the dirt bag from, as John mentioned, they're a pragmatic manner. And that I
would you say down to earth?
I would.
Both literally and figuratively.
I do avoid, fads that come and go in the gardening world, that you put a name on something and even though it's maybe been done for 1,000 years, I try to avoid that in talking about it unless I know something about it, or I have firsthand knowledge of how to, of these, fad gardening techniques or blah, 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 blah. And hopefully that has saved people some money in the past and will continue to in the future. But we rely on, gardeners, at least for the dirt bag, to do their share.
Absolutely. Pragmatic, sensible, down to earth, rooted in reality. What else can you possibly say about KBOO?
Man, I'm going to have to hire you, John.
KBOO.fm. You can donate securely there at our website, or give us a call at 877-500-5266. We have people standing by to take your call. And now back to Glenn. We've dealt with slugs, we've dealt with leaf miners. Where else on your radio dial are you possibly going to hear about that?
Yeah, I don't know.
And very truthfully, as an avid gardener myself, I want to hear this information, and it's valuable to me, and it's part of the reason why I am a volunteer and a contributing member of KBOO.
Well said, John. I just cannot say enough how much we appreciate all the volunteers. You know, it's not just me that makes this program go. There's our ace engineer, Patty, today helping out here. There's all the staff who give us guidance, and it's a group ecosystem here. It's a complex ecosystem, just like what we were saying that we want in the garden.
That's right. Diverse, sustainable, nutritious for your mind, your body, and your soul. KBOO.fm or 877-500-5266.
Well said. Well said. There's just a few more minutes here to make your... to become a member. If you're a first-time gardener, become a first-time KBOO listener, supporter, excuse me, become a member of KBOO. All right, I have time to throw in a few more slug control measures. The boards is one of my favorite ones, as I mentioned. The first time I did this years ago, I put a board down between broccoli plants, and I counted the number of slugs that stuck to that board when I pulled it up. And it was probably 3 feet long by, I don't know, 8 inches, something like that. There were 40 slugs on that. Most of them the Milky Garden slug, as I mentioned there. So when it gets disturbed, it will secrete this milky slime. But a couple of other techniques, paying the neighborhood kids 5 cents a slug. Hey, you know, you spend $1.50, that's 30 slugs. That's pretty good. You do that at certain times of the year, you'll prevent them from mating, which will prevent those 3 to 50 eggs or even up to 400 eggs. And by the way, they both can lay eggs after they've mated. Double whammy there, too. Copper banding, there's been some hoopla about that. I haven't heard much lately about that. Apparently, the studies or whatnot had showed that the slug, when it tries to climb over copper band of 3 inches, not just copper wire, that the slime reacts somewhat with the copper and creates a charge that maybe is distasteful. I did an experiment once putting a slug inside a copper band, 3-inch copper band, and on the sidewalk in the sun, and of course the slug crawled over the copper band to get out. So this is what I'm saying, that I try to avoid endorsing any technique that I don't have any firsthand knowledge of. Beer is another technique that is tried and somewhat true, that rotting vegetation gives off a yeasty smell, as does some beers. And the slug is attracted then to the beer, and it crawls in and it drowns. Now, you know, debate amongst yourselves whether that's a happy slug or not. But I will tell you that if you don't empty it regularly, it is not a happy sight or smell. But if you have dead slugs, they can go into the compost. They will break down. I mean, they're mostly water, of course. Add a little nitrogen. Hey, that reminds me. Patty, we haven't had any calls on the garden snumper. She says, no. Okay, well, I'll give you the answer then, because I only have a minute or so left. What do snails need? What element in the soil to construct their shells? Calcium. Calcium. Eggshells, snail shells. Yeah, I suppose if you had enough of those snail shells, it'd be a good source. Hey, here's the reason why slugs do pretty well here, is because we have volcanic soil, which doesn't have much calcium in it. Hey, that's why they can grow here without the calcium. Of course, there must be some calcium because these snails now are certainly growing nice, healthy shells there. Now, one last thing on the slugs. Hey, natural predators are pretty good. But how many of you have these in your yard? Ducks, geese, chickens, snakes, toads? Or if you do have those, how many of you let them run wild in your garden hunting out the slugs? Yeah, not that many. There's that saying, when you eliminate a pest's natural enemy, you inherit its work. Indeed, humans are the main predator of slugs now. All right, that's it. I'm out of time. This is Glenn Andreessen. Thanks for tuning into The Dirtbag. And thank you very, very much for becoming a member of KBOO. We truly appreciate it. And thanks to Patty and John for helping me out this hour. Jim will be back next month, so will I. Be well.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Deacom Street Doorway, a Linton feed and seed store offering essentials for farm life in the city, including animal feeds, plants from local farms and nurseries, and seed potatoes, onion sets, and chicks. Open Thursday through Sunday, 10 to sundown at Northeast Deacom and 8th, DeacomStreetDoorway.com. And from Hopworks Urban Brewery, committed to creating world-class food and organic beer as sustainably as possible at their carbon-neutral eco-brew pubs. Hopworks is located at Southeast 29th and Powell Boulevard, and Hopworks Bike Bar is at North Williams and Shaver, available on draft and in bottles throughout Cascadia. Information at 503-232-HOPS or hopworksbeer.com. And lastly, the Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW. The time is just 1 minute.